This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, strengthening the U.S.-Africa partnership as Russia spreads disinformation about the war in Ukraine. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Given Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov's speeches during his recent tour of Africa, one would have thought we were in the throes of the Cold War. He blamed the food crisis, which has hit African countries extremely hard, on the West. But VOA's Fred Harder quotes Natalia Bugayova, a Russian research fellow at the Washington-based Institute for the Study of War, who dismissed Lavrov's remarks as an attempt to reshape the narrative on the food crisis during his Africa tour. She says that Russia falsely links the West's many sanctions on Russia as the cause of food insecurity. Fact check. It is Russia's invasion of Ukraine, beginning on February 24, and its blockade of Ukraine's ports, which triggered the grain shortages, trapping millions of tons of grain and causing global food commodity prices to soar, writes Fred Harder. The EU ambassador to the United States told me in a recent Press Conference USA interview that Russia has cynically used food and the threat of starvation as bargaining chips to coerce the West into lifting sanctions against Russia. Meantime, the United States is engaged in countering the Russian disinformation with a few high-level visits of its own to the continent. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas Greenfield, has traveled to Ghana, Uganda, and Cabo Verde to, quote, to listen so that I can better understand the concerns of Ugandans, Ghanaians, and the people of Cabo Verde and share those concerns back home, unquote. Her primary focus will be on the efforts to mitigate food insecurity as well as high energy prices and climate change, including severe drought and floods, the effects of COVID-19, and conflict resolution. Ambassador Thomas Greenfield said in a press briefing, quote, Putin's illegal and immoral war of aggression in Ukraine has only added to this crisis, especially since some countries in Africa once got up to 75% of their wheat from Russia and Ukraine, unquote. In Ghana, she delivered a keynote address on peace and progress on food security. Ambassador Thomas Greenfield will also, quote, raise the alarm on the damage being done to the international system and the UN Charter by the unprovoked war of aggression on Ukraine, unquote. Secretary of State Antony Blinken will travel to Africa on the heels of the ambassador's trip to continue countering the so-called charm offensive by Russia. Blinken will stop in South Africa, the DRC, and Rwanda next week. He is expected to deliver a major speech laying out the Biden administration's strategy for sub-Saharan Africa, reiterating that African nations are geostrategic partners on everything from food insecurity, climate change, global pandemics, democracy, and maintaining a stable international system. For more on U.S.-African relations in the context of Russia's war on Ukraine and the instability it has spawned, we turn to two distinguished analysts. Ambassador David Shin is former U.S. ambassador to Ethiopia and Burkina Faso, now professor of international affairs at George Washington University, and Joshua Meservey. He is a senior policy analyst for Africa and the Middle East at the Heritage Foundation, a think tank based in Washington, and they join me now via Microsoft Teams. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carol.
Thanks, Carol.
Ambassador Shin, let me begin with you. And I'm going to characterize Sergei Lavrov's tour in Africa as the disinformation tour, the food crisis in particular. Talk about what the Russians are doing, how he was received in each of his stops.
Well, I would certainly agree with you that his tour was a disinformation tour, and it's had a certain amount of success. He picked countries to visit that tend to be somewhat more sympathetic towards the Russian point of view. That gave him something of an advantage. Also, there is an inclination in Africa today among some countries, certainly not all, to sort of use what is happening in the Ukraine or Russia's invasion of the Ukraine as an effort to get back at the West and take a bit of a jab at the West. It's important, I think, to recall that when the UN voted several months ago on condemning Russia's invasion, that slightly over half of the African countries did condemn the invasion, but that meant that almost half did not and took a neutral position. So he's working from a position of some advantage.
Turning to you, Joshua Meservey, for your take on Sergei Lavrov's disinformation tour of Africa.
Yeah, I agree with Ambassador Shin's comments on this and your own about this, again, being a misinformation tour. He clearly was there for two reasons, I would say. Africa has emerged as not a unified source of support, as the ambassador was just mentioning, for Russia's activities in Ukraine, but probably the largest collection of neutral states, at least, anywhere in the world on this question. So it is slightly friendlier ground for Russia, and that diplomatic support, or again, at least neutrality, is really important. These battles are fought out, of course, on the ground in Ukraine, but they're also fought at places like the United Nations, where you have dueling narratives and all sides are trying to show that other countries support their position. So African countries, some have indeed condemned what's been going on in Ukraine, but others, as we've been discussing here, have remained silent. We had one that actually voted against the resolution condemning the invasion. So he also
showed, and that was which one, Josh?
That was Eritrea, sometimes called the North Korea of Africa, a pariah state that has a global size chip on its shoulders is sometimes how I say it. It's an extremely prickly regime and never misses an opportunity to sort of poke the West in the eye. And I think that's what was going on here with its vote against condemning the invasion. And I think it's interesting the specific countries that Lavrov chose: Egypt, Congo Brazzaville, Uganda, Ethiopia. These are all countries that might be allies, even, you could consider them, of the United States, but still have a very fraught relationship. So Uganda is a great example. The U.S. works with Uganda, particularly on security cooperation issues, but the long-running president of that country, President Museveni, is a difficult character sometimes for the United States to deal with, and there's been really significant falling outs in the past, and even during Lavrov's visit to Uganda, Museveni's son was tweeting some very supportive things of the Russian position. So I think obviously these countries were chosen because they were known to be probably more friendly to the Russian position on Ukraine than some others, like perhaps Kenya would be.
Well, that's a very good point. Back to you, Ambassador Shin. Of course, Uganda is also a country that Linda Thomas Greenfield, our ambassador to the UN, is visiting. As you both said, it looks like governments in Africa and the Middle East are caught in the middle of this Russian war in Ukraine and the consequences. Just very briefly, Ambassador Shin, why are some of these African countries so susceptible, in your view, to Russian propaganda?
I think there are a variety of reasons for this, Carol. One is historical. Some of these African countries did appreciate the support that they got from the former Soviet Union during the days of African liberation, and they've not forgotten that. In fact, in a few cases, the leaders are even still hanging around. That does not, however, explain most of it. I think part of it is a view in some African states that, well, this is kind of a good time to take a poke at the West or the United States particularly. So we'll just be neutral on this issue and try to work with both sides and get the best out of both Russia and the U.S. or the West to the extent that we can. So I think there's a real strong element of that in a number of these countries. And then there are some very special case situations where you have the Russian mercenary Wagner group, very active in countries like the Central African Republic and Mali, where they have built up a great deal of influence with those governments. And you have other governments that are heavily dependent upon the purchase of Russian arms. And they're probably concerned that that supply could dry up if they were to significantly irritate Russia.
So, Josh, anything to add or subtract about why African countries seem to be susceptible to Russian propaganda, especially on this food crisis?
Yeah, I think I don't know how much these African leaders actually believe the Russian narrative. That's hard to determine. I think many of them are making a cold-blooded geopolitical calculation. As Ambassador Shin said, there's an opportunity here to play both sides off of each other. There's a long history of this in Africa during the Cold War with the very same antagonists, the USSR and the West, led by the United States. There are a number of African countries that tried to play both sides of that. So that may well be part of what's going on here. I also think there is, and I don't want to overstate this, but I do think there is some sense of maybe South-South solidarity is not the way to frame it, but there is a sense among some African countries, particularly those with repressive governments of their own, that are accused by the West of violating human rights, that resent that. And so when they see another country like Russia being accused of human rights violations, in my view, justifiably accused, I think that may just elicit a certain prickliness and their hackles might rise a little bit because it's the same type of accusations that they face, oftentimes, again, justifiably, but they don't like it when it happens to them. And they don't want to sort of normalize those types of human rights accusations on the international stage. So I think that might be an element as well.
You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Joining me via Microsoft Teams are Ambassador David Shin, former U.S. Ambassador to Ethiopia and Burkina Faso, now Professor of International Affairs at George Washington University, and Joshua Meservey, from whom you just heard. He's Senior Policy Analyst for Africa and the Middle East at the Heritage Foundation, a policy group based in Washington. And we're discussing the dueling Russian and American narratives over the food crisis and how they are playing out in Africa. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on our website at voaafrica.com/encounter. You may also find it on most of your favorite podcast apps. You may also connect with us on Facebook at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel and on Twitter at Carol_Castiel. Here's a shout out to a new Facebook follower, Maria Cris Miraz Gonzalez from Torreon, Mexico. Bienvenido, Maria. If you want to hear your name on the show, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter. We'll continue our discussion, Ambassador Shin. Let's move on now to the U.S., both its reaction and its regular interaction with the continent. We've had historic relations, as Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield underscored in her briefing before she went on her trip. There's no question about that. And from my own experience, and probably yours as well, Africans generally tend to have an affinity with America. We don't have the colonial legacy. But for the reasons you both articulated, there's a fraught relationship when it comes to Russia. Meantime, so Linda Thomas-Greenfield is in Uganda. She's in Ghana, and she's going to one of my favorite countries, I must admit, Cabo Verde. At any rate, talk about what she needs to do, in your view, to help counter the misinformation and reinforce the U.S.-Africa relationship.
I think one of the important things that needs to be done, not just by Linda Thomas-Greenfield, who knows Africa well, has spent a great deal of her own career in Africa, but by all senior officials, is to try to demonstrate to Africans that we're interested in the continent because it's Africa, not because there's competition with Russia or China or anyone else for that matter. That should not be the focus of our engagement in Africa today. It's also important, I think, to underscore that the United States is very much of a continuing factor on the continent. There's a great tendency today in what I see and read to suggest that the U.S. is on the decline in Africa, it's pulling back from Africa, it's lost interest, etc. I think that's just plain false. And if you look, for example, at the degree of humanitarian assistance that the United States has historically provided for all kinds of disasters in Africa over the decades and continues to do to the present day, it's enormous. I don't think the U.S. gets enough credit for it. I think we could be better about underscoring what we're doing on the continent, both in terms of humanitarian assistance and development aid, for that matter. But I think all of the American leaders or officials who are going to Africa need to approach the continent more in that spirit and make it less of an antagonism with the others.
Well, that's certainly a good point. And to be fair, Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield, who, as you said, has a long history in Africa. She used to be Assistant Secretary of State for the continent. She says in her briefing very clearly that Russia attacked Ukraine. Russia started this war, and everything we're going through right now related to Ukraine came about because of Russia's decision to attack its neighbors and kick the UN Charter in its back. And so she says, I'm not here to counter anything that the Russian foreign minister did during his visit. Again, to underscore that whether it's coincidental or the trips were somehow magically coordinated, that this was part of their agenda. But let me turn now to Joshua. Josh, just to get your view on how you see the U.S. relationship. I think we need to underscore, too, that just as Foreign Minister Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister, was arriving in Ethiopia, the United States had announced $500 million in additional aid for drought relief. So as Ambassador Shin said, we're doing our part, but what more should and can the United States do in your view to underscore that message and action?
Yeah. Well, first, let me say one of the things that I'm delighted about with Linda Thomas-Greenfield's visit is that she's going to Cabo Verde, as you mentioned, which is a tiny island nation. And it's very, very rare for senior American officials to visit a small country like that. But Chinese diplomats do frequently visit very small African countries. So I'm glad that, you know, we have senior officials who are casting a broader net on the continent. Ambassador Shin touched on one of my perennial aggravations, and that is this narrative that, as he mentioned, the U.S. is in retreat or we're withdrawing or not interested. I think he's exactly right. That is just not accurate. And we've heard it for a number of years now, including from Americans. And there is a host of meaningful American engagements that we could point to, like the Millennium Challenge Corporation, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, PEPFAR, which literally has saved millions of African lives, Feed the Future, Power Africa, the list goes on and on. So we should reject that narrative that the U.S. is uninterested and only parachutes into Africa when there's a crisis or we're trying to compete with somebody. Now, with all that said, we are terrible as a nation at reminding people of what we've done. And I think there's sometimes among some of our colleagues in the aid agencies or even on the diplomatic side, an embarrassment maybe to toot our own horn, or there's a sense that maybe it's a bit gauche to try to get credit for humanitarian aid. But I think this is something we should be doing because it's important to American national interests that we do get some recognition for how American taxpayer money is being spent on the continent. So that is something I wish we were much better at. I think we should have a strategic communications plan for Africa. I see very little coordination, for instance, among our embassies on messaging around some of these really critical issues. And I think, and I wish that the U.S. government would spend a little bit more time thinking about how do we talk to our African friends and colleagues about the U.S.'s interest in the continent and our activities there. We should be highlighting those things. We should be talking about them in a coordinated and thoughtful way. Initially, at the beginning of the Biden administration, there wasn't much indication that Africa was going to be getting a lot of, for instance, senior visits. There wasn't much activity there for a while. So I am heartened by the fact that we have Antony Blinken going, Linda Thomas-Greenfield. And in fact, this is not Blinken's first trip. And we've had some undersecretaries visit. Samantha Power, the USAID administrator, has gone multiple times. So that's positive, I think. We should have a high tempo of high-level diplomatic engagements with the continent. We also have the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit that will be coming up in December. That's also really positive. So that's all on the positive side of the ledger. I do think we can do much, much better, as I said, about tooting our own horn, frankly, about what we do on the continent.
Well, that's a very good point. So back to you, Ambassador Shin. With respect to the upcoming trip of Secretary Blinken, how can he, in your view, continue to not only counter the Russian narrative, as well as the very insidious and nefarious influence by virtue of the Wagner Group as it works in Mali and works to, unfortunately, destabilize many countries, as well as China? How do you see the importance and significance of Blinken's trip?
First, I agree with Josh that I'm not convinced that very many African leaders have bought into Foreign Minister Lavrov's disinformation. They're more than willing to receive him, to have a nice meeting, photo ops and all of that. But I don't see much indication they actually believe what he's saying when it comes to the rationale behind the invasion of Ukraine or the problems with delivery of grain from Ukraine to Africa. As far as Secretary Blinken's trip is concerned, I think the most important thing he apparently will be doing on the Africa trip is to make the first major speech on U.S. policy on Africa. There really has not been one yet since Biden went into the White House. And I think most of us have been waiting for this initial policy directive on Africa. And it appears as though that is going to be forthcoming in his visit to South Africa. So that in and of itself will be important. I don't think there's much that the United States can do in dealing with a Wagner group except to point out facts and to urge others to deal with their activities factually. They're up to no good on the continent. And I think where they are active today, these countries ultimately are going to regret what they're doing for the most part. But I'm not sure that's an issue that Blinken can weigh into with much success or where he would necessarily have that much credibility. I think that's probably up to others to do that. And finally, Blinken needs to spend his time in Africa making the point that I made earlier, that we need to deal with Africa for our own purposes and not because of what the Russians and the Chinese are doing. And that in and of itself will help to counter what those other countries are doing.
All excellent points. Back to you, Joshua Meservey. Anything to add or subtract with regard to the message Secretary Blinken should be sending as he stops in South Africa, Rwanda, and the DRC?
I hope that Secretary Blinken will focus on the positive case for engaging with the United States, for these African countries to engage with the United States. There's a time and a place for the discussion around great power competition, you know, what we call great power competition. I don't think we get very far having that discussion publicly with African countries. I think that should be a private, quiet conversation among friends. So I hope that the secretary will just remind people of, again, the United States record on the continent, and also point to the fact that the U.S. has been a faithful partner to non-African countries, and point out how well they have done because they've partnered closely with the U.S. So you can think of Japan or South Korea as prime examples of this. Countries, particularly in South Korea's case, that once were on a developmental par with many African countries and not that long ago, or even were below a number of African countries in terms of economic development. And now it's, of course, a wealthy and stable country. And South Korea's close partnership with the United States is a major reason for South Korea's very positive trajectory. So I think that's the sort of case that the secretary and other senior American officials should be making. Again, there's a time and a place to talk about Russia and China, but I generally think that should be a private conversation. You know, when you've had trust established and you have a relationship with someone, then you can maybe bring up some of those more, you know, those thornier questions. I'm very interested to hear about the strategy that Blinken will be unveiling in South Africa. Very curious, as we all are, I think, to hear what's in that. Also very curious to see the outcome of his trip to DRC and Rwanda, which we haven't talked about much, but very difficult diplomatic problems there between the DRC and Rwanda. Very dangerous. You know, there's a lot of violence and instability in eastern DRC that Kinshasa blames, at least partially, on Rwanda. So that will be a delicate task for Secretary Blinken as well.
And before we close, one quick comment from you, Ambassador Shin, about the upcoming elections in Kenya on August 9.
I think one of the important factors here is there will be a change of leadership because President Kenyatta is term limited. It's interesting in that President Kenyatta is not backing his deputy president, Mr. Ruto, but he is backing his traditional opposition member, Mr. Odinga. And that is sort of a switch in and of itself. It also indicates that the election is based heavily, I think, on personalities, less on issues. To the extent there are issues at all, they're mainly economic. The economy of Kenya is in a difficult situation at the moment with high inflation, very high youth unemployment, a serious drought, and those are the major concerns. There otherwise are not significant policy issues to deal with. And there's a lot of concern, as usual, about the aftermath of the election. Will it be peaceful or not? I think there's a fairly good chance it will be peaceful this time. The polls show that Odinga has a slight lead over Ruto at the moment, but it may be so slight that neither one will reach 50%. Which means there will have to be a runoff. And that, too, would be a first.
Indeed, and a topic for a future program. But for now, gentlemen, that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Ambassador David Shin, formerly U.S. Ambassador to Ethiopia and Burkina Faso, and Joshua Meservey, Senior Policy Analyst for Africa and the Middle East at the Heritage Foundation. Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.